In this Friday edition, we interview Captain Jane Belzer, who is part of the Community Mission Tour team that served our community this August. I started the discussion asking, how did you get interested in nutrition and to join the Army? She jumped right in. This is where I caught up.
So that she could stay in her home, which was really her strong preference. And once I started seeing what a major impact nutrition had on her quality of life, that was what kind of gave me that boost of like, you know, this specific thing, I'm really, really making a difference. And I'm really feeling kind of, my interest was really sparked. I just felt that kind of, that passion spark, you know, of like, oh, because I was kind of looking for a career then. I was like, this is really something I could do. I could be good at this. And so that's actually what motivated me to go back to school and study nutrition and get my master's degree in nutrition. As far as joining the military, I decided at one point I was really enjoying my career as a clinical dietitian. That means I work in an inpatient hospital on the civilian side. And I was felt like I was doing really good work there. But I feel like I like a lot of variety in my life. I've got a lot of different aspects to me. And I was trying to think of ways that I could explore some different interests, some different areas, some different angles on my career, in addition to the clinical dietitian side, which I really enjoy. And a recruiter showed up at a nutrition conference I went to, and I thought, you know, this is really a way I could make a difference too. This is a different angle I could take. And when they started talking to me about missions like this one, that was what really, really made me kind of decide, yeah, I think this is a good fit. I talked to my husband, and he was 100% on board. And so that was what led to me starting the process to commission into the Army. So I am a dietitian both on the civilian side and the Army side. As I said, this is the type of mission that really got me interested when they talked about doing this sort of thing, where going out into communities, working with people where they're at, figuring out what are the different considerations that I need to take into mind when I'm working with them, what are the different cultural considerations, financial considerations, logistical considerations, just, you know, location, availability of foods is a major issue, preferences, customs. And I feel like that really helps me in my career by working that creativity side of things. And I feel best at the end of a day where I feel like I've genuinely helped someone. So more exposure to people that I can grow myself professionally at the same time as feeling like I'm helping someone, I'm all in.
So how long have you been doing this, and do you have a rank that you...
Yes, I do have a rank. I am Captain Belzer. So when I'm on the military side, I get called ma'am a lot. And that's certainly part of my job. In the medical field, a lot of the ranking officers are known as subject matter experts, which means, as I said, I commissioned in as a dietitian. I actually commissioned in as a captain. And I didn't work my way up to that through my Army experience. So I'm actually relatively new in the military world. I've only been in for a few years. This is actually my first IRT mission, my first time getting an opportunity to go out into a community like this and work with people. And so far, it's really been amazing. I've encountered people is so kind and so open, and the ones who have been interested in talking to me, working with me, it's been a really positive experience overall.
Oh, I'm surprised, because I was thinking, well, you probably been, I was going to ask you, compared to other places have you been?
Well, compared to my civilian job, I can say that because I do work in a small rural public hospital. So it's not the same. It's not quite as far out there as this is, but it's certainly not the big city where I am. So I see some of the same issues, certainly. I think the main difference in my civilian job versus being here is that in my civilian job, as I said, I see mostly inpatients, which is to say I just show up in their room and start talking to them. So obviously, if they ask me to leave, I'll leave, but that's pretty rare. Most people, once you're already there, you're already talking to them, you're trying to help them feel better through nutrition, most people are pretty open to talking. Here, you know, some people are very open to talking. Some people, this is just not their priority right now. And I have to accept that and understand that everybody's got to make their choices on what their priorities in life are. I'm here to help people make overall quality of life improvements. So I think that nutritional quality and nutritional choices and improving your physical health and your mental health through nutrition is a reasonable, good choice. But, you know, at the end of the day, I can't make that decision for people. If they decide that it's not their priority, then that's their decision to make. I do think that there is a lot of benefit. And I think that I try to help people understand where that benefit lies so that they can work toward making it more of a priority.
I was thinking that we haven't always lived this way here.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always been wanting to... We maintain our culture here.
Yeah.
And it's very strong. I've been doing a series of questions with people asking them, what is the value of living in Hoopa Valley? And how does living in Hoopa Valley reflect your personal values?
Oh, I love that.
And it's some of the comments that people have been making is great. And then I want to follow that up because I like to work in consensus building. It's something... cultures around the world used to do this.
Yeah.
But then we got into this other form of government where majority rules and we got this party over here and that party over there.
Yeah.
Da, da, da.
Oh, yeah.
And so we got bombarded by this and it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And because it doesn't feel good, we are no longer the same type of person that we used to be.
Yeah.
But we still cling on to the compassion and the emotions and the camaraderie and the family and the environment.
Yeah.
But then we don't, I feel from the sense that I'm getting from people is that when I get to the question, well, what would be the worst possible thing if we didn't follow these values that people have been expressing? Now that's the next question I'm going to be asking people.
Mm-hmm.
And so then let them take that wherever they may feel that in the back of their base of their brain because that's where our fears come from or stored and remembered, you know, and my goodness, we don't want to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And then let them express that and see what expressions come up by the group and then say, okay, flip it. What would be the best possible outcomes if we start adhering to all of these values that people are holding so preciously?
Absolutely. I love that perspective. I think that, you know, from a nutritional perspective, from a nutritional slant on that, community and social aspects of nutrition, which is to say, what type of foods do we see the people around us holding dear and preparing and seeing as either sacred or seeing as just comfort foods or seeing as, you know, the common way the people around us eat, the people we care about eat, looking at that and making those community changes. And that can really make a difference. I find my personal strength is definitely working one-on-one, working one person at a time to try to see how can you be part of that future perfect community that, you know, we'll never get to perfect, but how could you be one piece of that, one little step along the way to move toward a consensus where we're in a community, we're working together, we're prioritizing nutrition, we're prioritizing healthy eating as part of community building.
Right. I'm hoping that's where we take this. And just like you look at the other energy sources that we use, you know, we use petroleum.
Mm.
Okay, now that's done a number on us.
For sure.
And now we're looking at, we've got like 8 electric car stations out in our
I noticed that.
And we don't. And who has an electric car here in Hoopa?
I thought I saw one. Doesn't somebody have one?
I don't know. If they do, it's, they keep it a pretty secret.
Okay. I swore I saw a Tesla driving past, and it wasn't one of ours. So I was like, oh, look at that. Yeah, well, but I did make note. I actually own a Chevy Bolt. So that's my main vehicle. And I was like, oh, that's great. If we came down here and visited as a family, I could plug in. That's awesome.
so we have that consciousness of this is the direction we want to go, because that's where we're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But we still got a lot of diesel trucks and vehicles and SUVs. And, and now the state of California is looking at prohibiting the sale of lawnmowers.
Oh, yeah. I think I heard about that.
Yeah. So they're not going to grab them away from you, but they're not going to sell them anymore.
Yeah. Going back to how, I mean, I could talk all day about, environmental and ecology aspects of different things, but going back to the nutrition front, since that's my area of expertise, looking at the environmental impact of food production and food consumption, for that matter, it has been really interesting. There have been a lot of good studies lately. There have been a lot more awareness overall about the environmental impact of our eating choices. And I'm really hoping that this conversation continues on a societal level so that we can move our eating patterns and our food culture in a direction of really considering those environmental impacts. We know that, meat is a great source of protein. And we know that a lot of the practices involved in raising that meat are really harmful to the environment. We know that getting fancy grains like quinoa is really healthy, but we also know that it has to be shipped here from somewhere that's better for growing it. And so looking at those different aspects and that push and that pull of different types of food, trying to find that balance where we're making sure we're prioritizing our personal health and our community's health, and we're also, trying to keep our precious resources, our earth that we rely on to live on, our home, and the health of that. It's a difficult thing to do.
Right, and the direction I'm going in is with you and talking about nutrition is the availability of sugar, and you talked about that yesterday in your presentation, how we need to be more aware of that. And I'm wondering, well, can you explain how the body absorbs sugar when we're, what's a good way of addressing this for as an individual and as it will reverberate into the community? So because I think that one of the major sellers in our grocery store is sugar candies and all kinds of pastries and stuff.
Absolutely.
And I think that's probably worldwide now. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely not limited to here. That is an issue pretty much everywhere. And I can speak to that a little bit. So if it's okay, I'll start with a little bit of an overview on one aspect of my lecture yesterday. So when we look at, why do people choose the sweets so much? Why is that such a big part of the grocery store these days? We're looking at where our ancestors came from, what they needed to survive and to be healthy. And those concentrated sweets were so hard to get back then, but they were such a good source of energy that we basically evolved this method, this reward system, where our brains keep super good track of how to get those super sweet sources so that we can get them again. So basically, when we have access to something very sweet, our brains pack that information away as really vital, important information, and it reminds us frequently. That's actually what's going on when we experience a craving. A food craving is our brains going, hey, you haven't had that thing for a while, that thing that gave me all those calories, all that energy. You should really do that again.
This is the Friday edition. We're talking nutrition with U.S. Army Captain Jane Belzer.
And as you trigger it more and more, as you eat those sweet things more and more, you trigger that pathway over and over again. Those cravings come in harder and harder because, you have access to this all the time? Oh, well, you should be eating them all the time. Yeah, definitely. Keep doing it, you know. So it's this cycle where when we eat the sweet things, that causes our brains to put these chemicals forth where then we're craving the sweet things frequently. So when we're looking at that and how does, you know, what do we do with that on an individual level, like you asked? So what we can do with that is we can be aware that this is our brain trying to protect us, trying to give us the best chance to survive. But we live in a different world of food availability and sugar availability than when we evolved that mechanism. So we need to look at that information too. And we can say, okay, my brain, my body wants me to be healthy. That's why I'm craving this sweet thing. But the problem is it's a different world. We haven't had a chance to adjust for that yet. It happened so fast in the scheme of things, this change to where we have all this abundant sugar. Our bodies have not had a chance to shift. So now it's like we're using an old software system to try to accomplish the same goal, you know, and it just having bugs all the time. This is one of those bugs where we have to recognize, well, this might be a good thing. If I was in a situation where I really needed that sugar, maybe I found myself in the middle of the woods for a few months. Maybe I would really need to make those strong memories of how to find those calories. But right now, where I am, those aren't helping me. So I'm gonna hear that voice in my head and I'm gonna say, you know, not now. That actually isn't the right choice. Right now, I need to make a choice where I'm eating those sugars less often. Because in this world where sugars are so abundant, so available, we find that when people eat those sugars often, they're putting themselves not just at high risk for diabetes and high blood sugar, but also putting themselves at high risk for cardiovascular disease. And it puts our body in this pro-inflammatory state. It means we're basically constantly making our body kind of fight a little battle all over. And when we're fighting that battle all over, all the time, then our body runs out of resources to fight the real important battles, that come up, you know, like diseases, like, injuries and things like that. So we want to make sure we save that energy. We want to take out all those added sugars from our diet. And, you know, when I say take them all out, I recognize it's pretty impossible to remove all added sugars, and that's okay. The key is to minimize, the key is to reduce, you know? So if you're currently in the habit of drinking 3 sodas a day or 3 energy drinks a day, dropping down to 1 energy drink a day would be a big improvement for your body. Would it be better if you drank no energy drinks a day? Yeah, it would, but also try to recognize that it's got to be in the big picture of your overall life. If that is just a bridge too far, well, then improvement's still improvement.
Wouldn't that also go towards salts?
That's a great question. So yes and no. Salt is also far more abundant than it ever was in the past. It used to be very, very difficult to get big amounts of salt. We certainly weren't having it in our diets like we are today. Salt is not, however, quite the same as sugar in the sense that as long as you're getting carbohydrates from something, as long as you're eating, you know, nuts, seeds, whole grains, whole fruits, as long as you're getting those carbohydrates from something, you could cut out every bit of added sugar and be perfectly healthy. I can't say the same for salt. You can get your salt pretty low and still be healthy, but you do need salt to live and to be healthy. Salt's a really important electrolyte in our body. So it's not necessarily a battle of getting it all out. However, I will say, if you're eating food from the grocery store that isn't in the produce aisle, or, you know, I might be done, actually, just the produce aisle, you're probably not going to eliminate salt from your diet. So I'm probably not too worried about you having a salt deficiency. That comes up pretty rarely. So mostly less is better for salt. It's definitely going to put you at higher risk for hypertension, higher risk for kidney and cardiovascular disease to have those high salt diets. But as long as you're keeping it moderate, we don't really see any harmful effects from keeping it moderate. So that would be under 2,300 milligrams a day. It's about a teaspoon a day. But again, that's not just added salt. That's the salt that's already in your foods too. So you can't be adding a full teaspoon of salt to your foods a day, because bread is going to have salt in it. Any kind of processed foods are almost all going to have salt in them. A lot of things are going to come with salt in them. So just being aware that when I say a teaspoon a day, I don't mean added on top of your foods. I'm talking about the total sodium. That would be that maximum.
Well, we did a program one time, the trade routes. And so we're looking at what were the most traded items in California among people.
Mm-hmm.
And the number one item was salt.
How interesting. I'm not too surprised to hear that, I suppose, because I know the Saline Valley over down by Death Valley, I know there's a big salt operation coming out of there. And I guess that must have come from an interest in that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, well, it's not available everywhere. So
right?
You have to, and we have something that they don't have. And mm-hmm. That was the whole barter system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That old phrase, you know, to make sure you're worth your salt, worth your weight in salt, things like that. I've heard both versions of that. You know, that is in reference to salt being used as a major currency item.
So in your presentation yesterday, you're also giving some tips on how to think about your menus and what mm-hmm. you eat. So could you express that some more?
Sure. So I like to make sure that I never tell people what to eat, because, first of all, it always fails. No one has ever gone home and eaten all the food that I said I ate. But really, to the point where I say, you really just got to figure out what's going to work in your life. But the overall eating pattern that I recommend following is pretty universally available in whatever your diet preferences are. It's just have protein, carbs, and fiber in every meal and snack, and try to eat at regular intervals. So that is pretty doable with just about every traditional diet that I've ever heard of. That's what's happening anyway. So it's good to just keep that overall diet pattern in mind when you're thinking about what types of foods do you like? What types of foods do you want to have on a regular basis? And then kind of look at that overall big picture. When we talk about foods that are more healthful, you know, those vegetables, herbs, spices, fresh fruits, whole grains, plant-based protein sources, so legumes, that's just a fancy word for beans and lentils, things like that, nuts, seeds, all those great foods, I mean, those could be any variety. So nuts and seeds, acorns are definitely on that list. You know, looking at where somebody is, what's either traditional or just preferred by that person, finding how we get more of those kinds of foods and then fewer of the highly processed, canned, boxed, frozen meal type things. Although I do want to make a quick exception for if we're talking about individually frozen ingredients, such as a frozen chicken breast, frozen vegetables, frozen fruits, those are fine. But it's when you get those pre-made meals, they tend to be very high in added sugar, very high in salt, things like that. So fewer of those highly processed foods, fewer, you know, cured meats, less on the fried foods, fewer added sugars, I'm trying to think of my list. Saturated fats, which is going to be, you know, animal fats, trying to get lean away from those and get your fats more from plant-based sources. Following that overall diet pattern when you're looking at what do you want to eat, that's the goal. So again, maybe that's a more traditional style diet. Maybe that's a more modern style diet. But as long as you're looking at that overall pattern and fitting into that, that's the key.
And could you talk about omega-3 fatty acids?
Sure. So omega-3 fatty acids, the term fatty acid is just a fancy term for fat. All fats are fatty acids, actually. I don't know why they've chosen this particular one to stick that on. They are also known as essential fatty acids. That means we need them. That's what essential means. So our bodies can't make them, and we need them for a lot of important processes that our bodies do. So since we can't make them and we need them, that means we gotta eat them. We can get those from cold water fish. Salmon is one of the highest sources out there. But herring, trout, lots of other good cold water fish sources for those omega-3s. You can get plant-based sources of omega-3s as well. Some of the big sources of that would be like chia seeds, flax seeds, walnuts. Those are going to be good sources of omega-3s too. But you know, you can actually get plant-based omega-3s just from greens. Spinach is one of the higher greens in omega-3s, but you've never heard spinach considered a high-fat food. That's because there's not a lot of fat in it. The fat that's in it is a pretty high percentage omega-3s, but you certainly can't expect to be getting enough from that. So eating lots of greens is a good idea anyway, so I always encourage people to get their greens, and bonus points, you'll get some omega-3s out of that.
And yesterday you talked about, well, we're 70% water, so talk about water, H2O.
Yeah, staying hydrated is super important. We are about 70% water. Our bodies need water for almost every chemical reaction that occurs. So if we're dehydrated, that means all of those reactions are kind of waiting in line for access to enough water molecules to work. So we think of water as just this fluid thing that, you know, when it's there, it's just there. But if you've ever tried to get, you know, salt or sugar, you know, maybe you're making lemonade and you're trying to get it all to dissolve. If you get too much, it just won't dissolve. There's no amount of making, you know, mixing it that's going to make it dissolve. And that's because really the water is broken up into individual molecules. Each one can only do so much. So in your body, again, it's not enough to just have some water there. You got to have enough. Staying hydrated is super, super important. And we try to encourage people to, when they're getting that water, make sure it's not attached to all that stuff that we were talking about being not so good for us. Sugar's the main one. So when we're getting our fluids, try to make sure that we're getting fluids that are unsweetened, preferably. We're getting ones that are going to be not adding that sugar to our body. And I'll do a quick pitch for our dental services as well and say that preferably, even if you want to go even one better on your fluids, make sure they're not acidic, because sipping those acidic beverages is so hard on our teeth, and keeping our teeth healthy is a really important part of nutrition too. Because when we can't chew well, because over years and decades we've broken our teeth down, then it's really hard to get a lot of those healthy foods. Those, you know, those vegetables sometimes are hard to chew. Even when we cook them, some of them are still hard to chew. It's hard to get that in adequate quantities to keep us healthy if we're not taking care of our teeth. So when I say acidic, soda's about one of the worst, because it's both super acidic and super sugary. So you're doing your teeth a double disservice, and you're doing your body a disservice with that sugar nutritionally as well.
Well, gee, thank you for being here. For really being here. Yeah, thank you for being.
Well, thank you so much for having me and for having us, you know, for hosting us here. This has really been an amazing mission to be a part of, and it's just been a really positive experience.
The Friday Edition is a production of Hoopa Tribal Radio, Hoopa, California. The host, producer, and engineer has been Joseph Orozco, lead producer. For KIDE, we thank you for listening.